So just to be clear, Betreich is not a con. It is not a scam game. You can tell that to your wives. We are coming, and we are coming in waves like some perverted surfer. Okay, let's get serious here. Sorry about the delay yesterday. As 20H was saying, there were some FFmpeg flags and default behavior that changed, but now it should be working. So I'm happy to tell you a little bit about how I've used Unix and Bitreich tools for making scientific papers. And you can see that as a continuation of some previous talks that I've held at BitreichCon 2020 and 21. In 2020, I talked about energy-efficient programming in science and how we can improve our fundamental methodology as well as programming practices to do better. And in 2021, I talked a little bit about Unix pipes and having standardized plain text format to communicate between components. And then last year, I was away in the fields establishing the Bitreich Arctic Vault in Greenland. So I'm excited, so excited to be back and talk about some new stuff today. So a little bit about me, in case you are new to Bitreich. I joined the ISE channel in 2019 and became a member in 2020, and recently got part of the Bitreich Council. And as a professional CV, I did a PhD in geology in 2015 in Aarhus University and continued working at different international universities since then. But then earlier this year, I got a bit tired of it all, and the scientific publishing process certainly also helped along with that decision. So I will tell you a little bit about these experiences. So publishing papers is the primary goal for most researchers working in academia. So in case you want to get money for funding or for doing further research or want to be successful and get promoted to senior professor positions, the only way to do that is by publishing papers. And for many, the opinion that has formed among many departmental leaders is that it's more important to publish many papers than publish few and more important papers. So it's really about slicing the research into small units and then just pushing it out, which is kind of a sad concept if you think about it. But the way it works is that you submit some kind of work to a journal, and then that journal's then works with that in terms of a peer review process. Not peer review as Lumidify showed in the paper earlier today, but peer review, where you have other researchers then going through the work. And this usually works in a standardized format, so the publishers have prepared some kind of Word or LaTeX templates that the authors then fill out, so the reviewers receive the draft manuscripts in a standardized way. Usually, the collaboration between researchers is extremely simple. So just to show you some horror examples that I've been involved in, these are some files that I had on my file system. So for instance, here's first a main document with how many authors are there? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 different rounds of revision. So every time a paper is modified slightly, then people add their initials to the end and then circulate it. So this is really some kind of very sequential, slow kind of collaboration where one person is blocking the progress of everyone else. And this is pretty much the common way to do it, actually. So the path from idea to final publication is very, very long and very slow and cumbersome. So this talk is about the idea that we can actually treat this text in the scientific papers as source code and use ideas from collaborative software development to actually do better when we develop when we develop manuscripts. I'm going to talk out from an example by showing how I structured it and how I used different Unix and Bitreich tools to make that more efficient. And that certainly also includes attempts at optimizing co-author collaboration and also offering reproducibility of results for any reader who later on wants to reproduce the results that we present. And finally, I'm going to throw out some ideas for improving the publication process in general across the scientific publishers. So why should you care? This is a bit of an insight into how this world works, how cumbersome it is, and why the process from idea to publication is kind of convoluted. And that's both a positive and a negative thing, because there is a lot of, should we say, fact-checking from peers and so on to make sure that whatever's in a journal is usually of a sound scientific quality. It maybe also tells you a little bit about why scientific papers are so hard to read, because they're really meant to be usually written for expert audiences. Finally, there might be some tricks or some tips if you want to produce other kinds of documentation. So this could just be man pages or whatever else that you want to document. So the example here that I would like to base this talk on is a recent paper of mine where I was the first author, and then I was collaborating with another researcher from an Israeli university and a US university. So we were working across different time zones, and we ended up publishing this work in a Nature brand journal called Communications, Earth and Environment. So this is the type of journal that you end up publishing in if the Nature journal, which is top of the pop, really the best kind of journal that you can publish in, if they see your work and think it's interesting, but not maybe of wide enough interest to make it into Nature, into their own journal, then they suggest that you resubmit to one of their lower tier journals. It's open access, which I really like. So it consists of both a main article, which is a total of 8 pages with 4 figures and 64 references, and also some supplementary information, which is 8 pages. So 8 pages of text, 8 plus 8, that's not an insane number of words or lines of text. But it really takes a long time to prepare it when it is prepared in this way. So the science behind this publication, just to give you some background info on that, is that ice sheets such as the Antarctic and Greenland ice sheets flow on soils. These are some soft sediments, and these sediments are saturated by meltwater. And so what we tried to look at was how the mechanics and the behavior of these subglacial material influences how the ice sheets behave in a warming climate. So trying to work with the climate problem and doing some physically motivated simulation on that. So on the technical side of things, I called a program that I wrote, which simulates these mechanical conditions under the ice sheets. And I talked a little bit about this program in the 2020 talk at BitreichCon. So for this paper, the program CNGFPF is run many, many times, tens of thousands, if not hundred thousands of times, with different command line arguments, which control the physical conditions under this ice sheet. So different inputs of meltwater or different glacier flow velocities, material parameters and so on. And each of these runs is called a simulation. So a realization of how the system would behave under a certain kind of condition. So all of these simulation outputs, they are all numerical text. So ASCII text with numbers on it. And these are then further analyzed in ORC or some kind of other processing for calculating things. And then finally, the results are plotted as figures with GNUplot. So GNUplot produces PDFs that I can then embed in the main paper. And the overall goal to all of this is to understand how ice sheets flow and how the physical behaviors are really affected by meltwater that reaches the ice sheet bed. So I briefly touched on the publication process before in general, how this works among all journals, but the main structure is something like this. So first of all, one or more authors come up with something that they think is scientifically interesting and they want to tell the world, both because they want others to know about their work, but also because they need to publish. So this is going back to the first slide that publishing is really important for making it in this world. So then the second point of action is that they produce some kind of text and figures to document this scientific result that they've come up with. It could be simulations like I talked about. It could also be measurements in nature or clinical trials or whatever is happening. The main author then puts this text and figures into a template from the journal and then submits a draft in their format to that journal. The journal then receives that manuscript, and the scientific editor then does something, and then there is profit. To be honest, it's not that simple. There are a lot more steps. So after it has been submitted, the scientific editor at the journal assigns some peer reviewers that then review that work. So this is not unlike perhaps a code review in software development, where you have other programmers look at a piece of code and figure out if this is technologically sound. So here the approach is instead that you find someone else who maybe is an expert in ice sheets, and they would take a look at the work and figure out if everything is scientifically sound and the methods the methodological approaches are good and all of that. Then these two to three peer reviewers write each a response. This is typically just annotations on a PDF or something weird like that. And then they send it back to the scientific editor at the journal. So this is the person who receives all of the feedback and then decides if, based on that feedback, if they want to publish the result or not. So they might even say, we don't like this work. There is too much criticism from the peer reviewer, so we are not interested in publishing that paper. And that actually happens quite often. But probably the majority of times, at least in my experience, they want to give these suggestions to the original authors and give them an opportunity to improve their work. So the authors revise their publication based on that feedback and individually respond to all of the the reviewer comments in a response letter. So if a given reviewer, let's say reviewer 2, says that I think you should plot this figure differently, then they would respond both in text, in writing, saying, thank you for that, it does make sense, we have changed the figure accordingly in their response. So they both have this response to the criticism along with the change itself. The authors then incorporate all of this feedback and maybe fight some of it back if they don't agree with some of the criticism and produce a new PDF, which is the updated version. They submit the source files for the journal to typeset. They submit all the figures in original image formats like PDFs or PNGs or JPEGs or whatever is suitable for that kind of work. They have this response to reviewers document where they respond on all the feedback they received. And then finally, they also submit a document which shows all the changes. So it's easy for the reviewers when they receive it again to see what have they actually changed based on our feedback. So this is kind of like a diff document, so you can see the differences. Then the scientific editor as point 8 decides if all of this should be repeated. And it's not uncommon that this iterative cycle with a peer reviewer feedback and author corrections that can easily take place 2, 3, maybe even more times. So each of these loops, say step 4 to 8, probably takes something like at least 2 months, maybe more. So I hope you can see how all of this adds up to making this a very slow process. Finally, hopefully the editor is happy with the state of the manuscript after all of these revisions. The editor decides to go ahead and offer the author's publication in the journal. And then something happens which surprises many people, and that is that the authors, the original authors, they pay maybe up to 10,000 euros for getting that paper published at the journal. It can also sometimes be maybe 5,000 euros, maybe 2,000 euros, but the original authors pay to have their work published. And please remember that, it's also worth saying that the scientific editor is usually also doing this on a volunteer basis, and so are the peer reviewers. So all of the people here, the original authors, they're paying to get it published, and the scientific editor and the peer reviewers, they are all doing all of this this work, quote unquote, for free. It's kind of for free, but it's kind of also their job to contribute to these things. And the money goes to the journal, and of course the money the journal has some work to do with typesetting it and hosting it on a web page, but yeah. It's a lot of money compared to what you're getting for it as an author. But that's the game, and I don't see it changing anytime soon. Even though every researcher could just, you know, produce a PDF themselves and put it on the web, but the guarantee that comes along with publication in a acclaimed journal makes the results much more acknowledgeable by peers. So then, after all of this, it's typeset and it's put on a web page and it gets a DOI and so on. Finally, I put the remark that actually it's not too different from the iterative process that that takes place in source code development. So even without peer review, you know, software development is always about iterations. Producing some code, figuring out, okay, it doesn't work, let me change some stuff, let me change some FFmpeg flags and hopefully get this audio streaming to work. Everything is iterative. So this is just a very slow iterative process. So I won't spend too much time on the technical details here, but just again to illustrate, the way that I approached this recent paper was to split it into four Git modules that are then combined as submodules of a parent project. So first of all, there is this scientific program, CNGFPF, that produces results that's actually doing all of the numerical work and all of the spending all of the computation runtime for producing these results. And along with the publication, there is a snapshot of this code published in an archive somewhere, because the journals, they want to have all source code permanently archived, so it's not being lost as GitHub shuts down sometime in the future. Then along with that, I have a repository that's CNGFPF EXP1 that has all of the simulation setups that I run the worker program with. And this in this repository, there are also instructions for plotting the figures, and this is also permanently archived somewhere. Then there are two other Git repositories. This is for the main article and the supplementary information, so all of the LaTeX and BibTeX source files in the Nature Journal templates and all of that. And fortunately, there's now a platform called Overleaf, which makes it simple for collaborating on LaTeX texts together with people who don't know how to write LaTeX, actually. So this is kind of like Google Docs, but just with LaTeX running in the background. And I can still sit here and just treat it as a remote. So I don't ever have to use this web interface myself for editing the paper. I can just push it there as a Git remote, and then my co-authors can put in their changes there, and I can pull it back and then kind of be leading the preparational process. Good. So again, this was organized with Git modules. So all of these different components are subdirectories in my folder. So we have the experiment somewhere, and then we have the main paper in a different directory, and then the supplementary somewhere else. And this is all organized with makefiles so that the dependency tree is made right. So if I stand in the main directory and then type make, then it makes sure, first of all, that all of the figures are produced correctly in the EXP1 directory. So all of the numerical simulations are run to produce the figures. And once the figures are produced, then they're copied back into the main folder or main directory. And then this is run with LaTeX compilers to produce the PDF that I then submit. And the same is happening for the supplementary information. So just a quick note on Bitreich tools for running the experiments. 20H helped with some OpenMP parallelization here. That was very cool. And secondly, I also used Drist to actually run these computations on different computers, because these computations take quite long to run. So Drist makes it possible, again with makefiles, to deploy these program invocations on different machines and then copy the results back. So this makes it a more parallel problem in order to produce all of this. So this dependency network, I think, works very well. Of course, it takes a little bit of time to produce, but once it's there, it's rock solid. And this is something that this way of thinking is something that I've learned from Bitreich to really use makefiles to their furthest extent. and make sure that everything is modular and the dependencies work well. So this is a suggestion for doing similar work from me to you. Let's just skip this in the interest of time and go forward for kind of summarizing a little bit. So I have some tips for writing LaTeX, which come from this. And the first tip is to not write LaTeX because the compilation process is very arcane. So instead of having a clever compiler, it always reads the source code sequentially and processes the source code sequentially. So in case there is something in the source that is not linear with the line number in the source code, it simply has to rerun the program. So often you need to call pdf-latex three to four times in order for all the cross references to work out correctly. And it's also very slow. LaTeX full installations come with a lot of unneeded cruft. There are modules that come with installations for making web quizzes and all kinds of different stuff, which is absolutely unnecessary. But all of a sudden, you need some kind of module, and so you end up installing the entire thing anyway. So unfortunately, Word and LaTeX are the de facto standard for publishing across journals, but it would be much cleaner to use something like TROF or something like that. But I don't think that will ever happen. I can also recommend that you use version control. This is, of course, or should be no surprise to you, but it would be a surprise to many of the academic colleagues. I also recommend to treat textual documentation with one sentence per line of code. So if you have one sentence, don't wrap it to 80 columns or anything like that. Don't reflow any paragraphs, because if you change one word in a sentence, then you get one line of diff in your version history. But if you have reflowed the paragraph to, say, 80 columns or 80 characters, then that entire paragraph changes in the diff. So I think it makes sense to think of text as source code and treat it that way. I recommend using makefiles also for this. Overleaf is incredibly useful for collaborating with less technical co-authors. And if you're happy working just with your command line and your editor on your computer, then you can just treat it as a Git remote. It's also very useful to Git tag the individual revisions, so you can always make diffs in between submitted version when they want to see all the changes. So just finally some ideas for improving the publication process. Think of text documentation like source code. Have some kind of make publish target. It would be really cool if we could submit or actually push or maybe even deploy the manuscripts directly to the journal or publisher with rsync or something like that. It's kind of old school that we have to go to a web interface and zip it and then upload it that way and wait for some kind of validation mechanism that can act up to process the uploads. It would be incredibly easy if it can just rsync it to some remote directory. Perhaps we should even encourage journals to accept Git repositories and perhaps act as Git remotes. I think it would possibly be a very positive development if a paper is published with the full Git repository that produced that paper, because there's a lot of talk about falsification of results and maybe the authors changed something just so the results are more convincing. publishing the full Git history is not a way of completely avoiding that, but it is a way of being more transparent about how the work is done. I also think that this archiving of snapshots should be a responsibility of the publishers. Yes, I think that's that. Modularity is good. Unix tools are good. Bitreich tools are good. It can be difficult to collaborate across different technical levels, but we have some things that can help us. LaTeX is inefficient, but it's far better than Word. We can learn about textual processing from the Gopher Times. Happy to hear your ideas. Thank you for listening.